Hello, Jordan.
What is up, Michael?
Jordan, I had a way that I was going to start this podcast, this weekly upload that is going to go on for forever for the foreseeable future, but I'm pivoting based on the last 10 seconds. I'm peeing it up based on what's going on with you. You're exhausted. You only slept 2 hours last night. You're still here. We're doing back-to-back pods today. We're banging them. These might be the best two podcasts we ever do. Not because you feel like it, not because you want to be here right now. There's probably a million things you'd rather do than this podcast right now, but we're banging out back-to-backs because you're doing what you're supposed to do. You're doing your duty rather than doing what you feel like doing in this moment.
Yeah, man, I'm fucking tired. I was really hoping we were only going to do one podcast today, but I love how you're bringing the heat. You're going to carry the load for us today.
You're carrying the load.
No. You're carrying the load.
You have the rock on your back going up the hill right now on 2 hours of sleep. And there's a lesson in there. There's a lesson in there that all of us can derive from this, which is do the right thing, even when you don't feel like it, even when no one's watching, like Jordan's doing right now for us.
Love it.
Now we got, and that might be work. That might be making content. That might be getting your workout in. That might be dialing in your nutrition. That might be a million things in life, but however that resonates with you, take it and run with it today. Next up, Jord. By the way, I'm amped up from the leg day I just had.
I was going to say, you must have had a great workout this morning.
I did. I literally just finished it like 18 minutes ago. Got a little protein here. Anabolic window. You loved the Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah. I did love the Super Bowl.
Can we quickly just splice in? I believe the exact words and tonality from Jordan a few weeks ago were, of course I'm not watching the Super Bowl.
I think I said absolutely. absolutely not. The fuck not, I think is what I said. And you got so mad. You were like, all right.
Will you watch the Super Bowl?
Absolutely not.
Oh, okay. However, sometime early in the third quarter, I got a text on my phone, Jordan Syed saying, saying, someone used to mispronounce Jordan's name. We got a good kick out of that. Dude, this game's amazing. I mean, I could go back and read them, but you were into the game.
Dude, yeah. So I wasn't planning on watching it, but my wife was like, I want to see the halftime show. So I was trying to help her figure out how to get it. Oh, this reminds me, we need to cancel our subscription to whatever the fuck we got so we could watch it. And then I caught like the last 50 seconds of the first half. And I was like, oh, wow, this is pretty close. Watched the halftime show, which I was like, what are all these marshmallows running all over the field? and I was also like, man, like they're really high up. I was like, that looks dangerous, especially as like she's pregnant and she's going really high up there. I was like, man, that's crazy. And then the second half started and I was like, I'll watch a little bit. And I got sucked in immediately. It was just like immediately a great, great game. I liked it a lot. So
yeah, you were commenting on like individual plays. I was getting texts like you were really into it.
Smith-Schuster coming out hot. You know,
it's about time. I drafted him this year. He didn't do anything all season long.
Oh, really?
This is not going to turn into the fantasy football podcast. No, and the reason we don't even have to get into it. I'm glad you enjoyed, and I'm glad
Let's go into it.
I was telling you on the phone, there's a corner of Twitter that like takes such pride in hating sports. It's like a hyper self-improvement sector of Twitter that reminds me of the people who like, in any conversation will remind you of the fact that they don't own a TV and that they never watch TV and they only read books. It's kind of like that degree of arrogance around never watching sports, not knowing anything about sports, only caring about whatever insert interesting thing is. And
if it's not productive, they don't do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and which is lie. They're lying.
And I think you and I both did that at some point in our lives, by the way. So,
oh, yeah. when I was younger, I used to be like, I haven't watched TV since 1984.
Yeah. But that's what it reminded me of when you're like, I'm absolutely not watching the Super Bowl. I was like, all right.
But that wasn't why I said it. I usually don't care about football. But
my point was, it's not a football game. It's a cultural event.
It is a cultural event, but usually football, I'm not the biggest fan of. And I'll tell you why. There are a lot of great things about it. The reason I'm usually not a big fan of watching football is because, for example, there could be 20 seconds left in the game, and those 20 seconds could be like 15 minutes.
That's basketball.
No. They have, like, maybe I'm exaggerating a little bit, but like maybe like 2 minutes could turn into 15 minutes. Yeah,
basketball,
with timeouts, challenges. Basketball's faster. I think basketball is much faster paced.
Basketball end of game can take forever with fouling. Football end of game is not slow.
Well, at any point in time in a game, like with, you know, the play is like, what's the average length of a play? 7 seconds?
Sounds right. I don't know.
So for me, it's like, oh, like the average length of a play between 5 to 9 seconds probably. And then it could take like a couple minutes to get back. I'm like, oh, this is just a little bit boring for me. And it's probably also because I don't know all the plays and all that stuff. So it's like, that makes a big difference. Like the announcers were like, this is the second time they ran that play. I was like, how the fuck did you know that? Like, that's crazy that you can see that. I can't, when I see it, I just see a mash of people. And I understand all the downs. I understand, like, you know, throwing versus run. I understand the basics, but I don't know the in-depth plays, which is probably why I get a little bit bored of it.
Understood. When I think football, or when I think Super Bowl, I think commercials, I think overeating, I think chicken wings and buffalo dip. I think like having laughs with whoever you're hanging out with. I think Justin Timberlake ripping off Janet Jackson's dress or whatever and her boob falling out. Like, I think stuff like, seriously, I don't think like, because I don't really care about a random Chiefs-Eagles game. Like, I'm not going to be sports betting. I'm not. But
I feel like that wouldn't even be a big deal now. Remember when that was a huge deal? And like remember like when, if I remember in high school, if someone had taken nudes and the nudes like circulated around the school, it was a huge deal. Like people, and now it's
you're
like,
talking about like a peer in school?
Yeah, like someone in school. Like if like one of the kids like sent, like took nude pictures and then like someone like sent them all around, people were like, oh my God, your life is over. And now it's like, if nudes get leaked and people make a big deal out of it, it's like people are like, relax, right? It's like people don't care about that stuff anymore. It's so funny how times have changed.
It's interesting. I think like we're close in age. We're 4 years apart.
Yeah.
I think you just showed one of the, because there's not a, you know, there's differences between generations, right? But as you get closer together, there's not that many differences. Mm-hmm. I think that was one of the differences in tech, because there was no Facebook. Not that you're putting nudes on Facebook, but there were just less phones, less pictures, less of that. I can only remember one or two instances where some girls' nudes were circulating around the school, but that wasn't like a thing when I was in high school.
Dude, I remember these three girls in high school took naked pictures of themselves together, and they were circulated, like people printed them out and circulated it around the school on paper.
Goodness.
Like, it wasn't going around on phones. It was like literally like on paper. Mm-hmm. And then, like, yeah. So I think people would send them around via phone too. But yeah, it's pretty crazy how times have changed. And now it's like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah. There's less.
Like the Janet Jackson Super Bowl fiasco.
Correct.
That was a huge deal. And now it's like, that wouldn't make a big deal at all.
There's way more sexualization of everything in culture, in movies, in entertainment, everything. On the internet. Like Rick Fitt's question in yesterday's Q&A in the mentorship, talking about potentially making content around porn and masturbation and like, you know, weighing back and forth. Like all of that is just become so normal in society. For better or worse. We're not going to make moral judgments here on the Personal Trainer podcast.
Not yet.
Even though we want to, but we're not. We're going to.
We should.
We're not. We said we cut out something where we had a spirited debate, and it's my fault.
I don't even remember what it was.
Okay, then I'm not going to remind you, but I don't know how to walk a line. I run through a brick wall, whereas you are more intelligent than I am. And I'm like a bull in a china shop.
I'm not more intelligent.
Actually, this translates well into something. You know the advice that's like, you should write at a second grade level so that you can have a bigger audience and that so more people will like be able to get your content. I hate that. Now, I understand you shouldn't be making content specifically to impress coaches using big words, using like, you know, very specific anatomical terms that your ideal client isn't going to understand, right? You want to make it basic enough for the person who you want to reach to understand. But if you're writing at like a kindergarten level or what, you know, whatever the bar is, fourth grade level, I don't know, writing so that anyone can understand it, I don't think you actually want a client who reads at a third grade level. Like, I don't think you want to work with that person as an online fitness coach.
This is an interesting discussion. Because I very often say you should be able to make something so simple a five-year-old can understand it. With that being said, I think it's different in terms of what you are capable of doing versus what you actually do. So, for example,
yep,
you should be so well-versed in your knowledge and how to apply this and all that and how to explain it that if you needed to, you could explain it to a five-year-old. But okay. I obviously, you're writing at a five-year-old, like five-year-olds, like, I don't know what their reading level is, but not very good, yeah. Right? So it's like probably finding the balance between that like second grade level and college level. It needs to be somewhere in the middle, right? It's like, I think that even unless your target market is highly educated people within this arena currently, you know what I mean? It's very difficult.
I'm with you. There are multiple purposes to writing. Like writing is how we think. Mm-hmm. Like it's really hard. It's hard to just sit there and think. Like writing and fleshing out your thoughts is a good way to think. If you're intentionally dumbing yourself down, then you're dumbing down your thinking. And maybe you're doing writing that's non-content specific writing, but I don't know. I've just heard in too many guru-y places, like, you know, never use big words and always make it so simple a third grader can understand it. And when I think of going way back years, like the people who I've worked with who, you know, don't understand grammar and just like give me, you know, a block paragraph with that's a whole run-on sentence. It's like, I don't want to be working with third grade reading people.
Yeah. Yeah, it's. I'm having all these different thoughts now because I agree in some ways, I disagree in other ways. I think it depends on so many things, not least of which who you want your clients to be. Also potentially the way in which you're distributing your content, right? Like if I'm doing a 60-second Instagram reel or a very like an Instagram caption where it's relatively quick content to digest, I'm not going to make that complex because I don't have enough time to fully explain the nuance. So I'm going to make it more dumbed down and simple and practically applicable. Whereas if I'm doing a podcast or a YouTube where it's 30, 45, 60 minutes, well, now I have the time to explain it in a very high level way and then go back and break it down and say, so this is how we explain it in a high level. Let's go back and break it down so you can understand it if you didn't understand that, and then reiterate it again at that high level so now you can internalize it. I think the longer form content, whether it's an article, YouTube, podcast, whatever, that's when you can use a much higher level of communication. But in the short form content, I think it does make sense to quote unquote dumb it down just so that you can get people who maybe – if they only saw the high level discussion and they didn't understand it, especially nowadays, they might just quit. They might leave. They might go to something else. It's like so many different reasons. So using it as a way to get people into your gate, like open the gate to them so they feel a little bit more welcomed and not like, all right, well, this is going to be way over my head all the time, and then slowly educate them. Like that for me is my best client is not the one who comes in super educated. It's the client who comes in wanting to become educated. It's the one who's willing to learn and like, hey, teach me. Cause sometimes the ones who are already super educated, they're stubborn. They have their ways to like, it's like, they're like, well, I know this is true, so how come you're doing this? It's like, shut the fuck up. Like, there are other reasons why. Whereas the people who are really willing to be educated by you, I think that's the best client.
Agreed. And I think the people who are willing to be educated by you are going to fire up dictionary.com if they don't understand something in your content, similar to what you and I have done when consuming people outside of the fitness industry over the last 5 years. It's like, oh, I don't really know what he's talking about. I'm going to Google that word. Oh, that's interesting. I didn't even know that word. That makes sense in that context. I think a lot of that learning, that person who wants to learn is going to figure out what you're saying. I also think that you're right that on short form content, if your goal is simply maximize audience growth, sure, cast a wide net, dumb it down, make it as palatable for as many people as possible. I agree with that. If that's your goal.
Yeah, do both. Like, do a little bit of both. But yeah, I think that makes total sense.
All right. I have a question that I think you'll want to talk about.
Okay.
Hey, guys. Thank you very much for the content. This is from Momo. Shout out, Momo.
What's up, Momo?
Here is one for you. And I have a small opinion on this that I'm going to voice, and then I'm just going to let you take it because I have no idea. How do you think the AI, ChatGPT and co, will change the online fitness trainer industry? What should trainers focus on that will not be displaced by the technology in the near future? Thank you again for your great efforts. Keep pushing, Momo.
So funny. I literally just had a conversation about this 30 minutes ago.
Good. Perfect. I have no idea. And I'm more skeptical of AI than the average person, and I'm more pessimistic about what ChatGPT specifically is going to bring in terms of usefulness, not only in the fitness industry, but in any industry. And I'm not I'm pessimistic specifically about ChatGPT, not AI long term. I think it's going to do a lot, but I think it's overhyped right now. To answer your question, Momo, I think the one thing that coaches should continue to do to not be displaced is to put out really good content specifically to build depth and relationship with individuals who follow you. Because I think that's one thing, like, I don't think humans will be able to relate to computers and have relationships with computers in the near future, maybe in the distant future, which is a scary world to me. I don't think humans will be able to have that same relationship like they do with other human beings. And so building connections with your audience by helping them for free consistently over a long period of time is one thing you can do to secure your future against the potential disruption of AI.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much we can talk about with this. I know the person I was just talking to like half an hour ago, she was saying she's like worried about like almost like a doomsday thing. Like, well, what if it gets so smart, it's smarter than humans? And I'm like, it's sort of like an I am robot type thing where I'm not worried about that. Maybe that's naivety on my part, but I'm not worried about that. What I am worried about, and we don't have to go into this, is how we can already see how what we search online is censored, and there's censorship across the board by, like, it's humans who are controlling what we see. They decide like what we're going to put at the top of the Google search.
On Google, for example. Yep.
Google, YouTube, all this stuff. Like, yeah, the Twitter files coming out showed us that this is real. And they also showed us that it's not just internally at these companies, but the CIA and the FBI have been involved in it as well. And these companies create relationships with these government entities, and these government entities can say, hey, anything posted about this, we want you to downgrade or remove from your platform. It's like, this isn't just a conspiracy theory. This is real. There are now, like, there are trials going on about this because of everything that came out that leaked from Twitter. So I'm more worried about the information that will be pushed onto generations, that anywhere they search, they will only be able to find a single narrative based on what whatever group is in power wants them to see. That's like the only worrisome thing for me. in terms of ChatGPT, for example, I've been playing around with it a lot, and I think there are some amazing pros and some pretty clear cons. For example, you can go on ChatGPT, and like I've played around with saying like, hey, write me a caption, an Instagram caption on the benefits of fiber. And it will write out a legitimate caption explaining the health benefits of fiber, why you should have it, how much you should have, like it'll do it. The issue is it's, even though it's decent and it's like, it's a great starting point, it does lack personality. It lacks personality and it lacks consistency with subsequent captions. So it might give me one voice in one caption, but then I ask it to write another caption and it's a completely different voice. And if you want to stand out in the fitness industry, the one thing that's going to make you stand out is you. Like that's what's, it's not necessarily even the information as much as it is you, because the information is readily available to everybody. The reason people want to work with you is because it's you and it's you giving the information. It's your personality. It's your voice. And so if your voice is constantly changing because you're only writing your captions with ChatGPT, there's not much continuity. And it's very difficult for people to really resonate with you. Now, you could use it as a starting point to get like a base framework. If you're like struggling with writer's block, you're not sure how to begin, cool. Like you could use that and then inject your own personality and voice in there. I think that would be a very smart way to use it if you were going to use it. You could even use ChatGPT to come up with content ideas. Like, hey, you could literally say, give me like a 100-point content idea list for fitness and health. And it will do that for you. Like there are some really, like it doesn't have to write anything. It can just give you content ideas. So there are many great ways to use it. And I would actually prefer you use it from the perspective of just use it to spark ideas that only you can then mold with your personality and your thoughts and your history and everything that you can bring to the table. The way to stand out is to be yourself, because that's really the main difference. It's the knowledge, the information, like that's going to be similar across the board, but you're the variable and you're the asset. And so that's where I would say, using yourself as the draw, as opposed to necessarily the information.
How have you found the accuracy of the information as it relates to fitness or nutrition?
Thus far, specifically in regard to fitness and nutrition, no other topics.
Right.
Thus far, it's been great. Okay. Thus far, the accuracy has been fantastic. I haven't done deep dives, for example, in like high level strength training program design. I haven't done that yet on ChatGPT. I haven't done high level individualization for, let's say, like, well, how would I deal with a petite woman who's 4'11", 110 pounds, and like, how would I go about making a meal plan for her that's sustainable? I haven't done that high level stuff yet. And I think that like it would be very interesting to see that. But in terms of basics, like benefits of fiber, benefits of cardio, benefits of strength training, motivation, these basic things where it can just spit out basically pretty run-of-the-mill generic responses, the accuracy has been there for sure.
It's interesting because my understanding is ChatGPT crawls the internet and takes hundreds, if not thousands plus of results or published information, and then somehow comes to a correct answer. And so to take something that isn't super high level in fitness, but a question like, you know, how much protein per day is optimal for losing body fat and retaining muscle mass, or a question like, what are the main factors in losing body fat? These questions that have many different answers. Another, what is the best diet for preventing heart disease? Where you have, you know, some people think you only eat vegetables, and then some people genuinely think you only eat saturated fat, like literally, and protein. Like carnivore is the best for heart health. Vegan is the best for heart health. Like with all of those ranging opinions. And I guess I could play with it more. I'm just adverse to it for a handful of reasons. Like, I don't know. I'm curious what the accuracy has looked like for you, and maybe the ones that you have tried looked good, but you haven't gone super deep.
Yeah, I haven't gone super deep and specific yet. It would be interesting to see, like, just gave me a content idea, like asking ChatGPT, how do I lose fat? Seeing what ChatGPT spits out and then making a video response to that would be like a cool piece of content to make, which I might try and do at some point in the next day or so.
Even long form, doing a handful of them for a video.
Yeah, seeing how that goes. Yeah, that would actually be very interesting. But yeah, it'd be cool. Like you do a Q&A on Instagram and take people's questions, put the question in ChatGPT, see what ChatGPT says, and you give your critique of that answer. Mm. That would actually be a really cool content idea.
Yeah. We'll see. Another piece of this is it feels early to me, right? Like neither of us can predict the future. And so I think what matters more is, you know, once a technology has actually gained some more mainstream traction, then starting it. But right now, like I would say the worst thing you can do is have, you know, analysis by paralysis, sit there, not do anything and be worried about how AI is going to ruin everything. It's like, well, it hasn't ruined everything yet. So let's get while the getting's good. Let's make hay while the sun shines.
I think it's the other person I was just talking to, she was saying she's worried that, like, you know, people aren't going to have to do the work anymore. And I understand that, but that's what people said when calculators came out. It's like, oh my God, they're not going to do the math anymore. It's like, it's okay. But I do think things are so easy for us as is right now.
How dare you?
Like, especially if we're living in these Western countries or in a first world country and we have all of these tools to us, things are so easy already. It's like just adding in these things is not going to all of a sudden make people be like, all right, well, I'm going to go viral on all these. Because you still have to put in there's still work. There's still work you have to do. And it's not going to make a big difference on that front. What I think is a very interesting thing from a cultural perspective is the potential mental health effects that I see across the board with social media. And as things get easier, it seems like mental health will get worse. As more things get easier for us to do, ordering groceries just straight delivered to your door and all of these things take the responsibility away from you, where now you just have more time to sit down and look at bullshit on social media and see people arguing and be fed this propaganda. I think as things get easier, we actually see a greater decline in mental health, because now people, like before, if even something as simple as going on a drive, walking around the grocery store, putting everything in the cart, like paying for it, going back, packing up your car, going unpacking it, like bringing it back to your refrigerator. This is several hours of work. Whereas now it's like you could just either go and have them put it right into your car so you don't have to go in and do all that stuff, or literally deliver it right to your house. And so what are you doing with all that free time? Well, now you're spending your free time looking at shit that is specifically designed to create an emotional response out of you. There's a lot of fear mongering. There's a lot of all this bad stuff that I think is creating a massive decline in mental and emotional health as a result of things being too easy.
We are 100% aligned on this. I think what this creates is the need for you to take personal responsibility on how you use those additional hours. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, improvements in technology, improvements in productivity have made my life easier. Do I want my life to be easy? If I have extra free time per day, does that mean I'm going to scroll Twitter with those extra 2 hours? Or does that mean I'm going to go sign up for X class, learn Y skill, do Z difficult thing, increase the amount of cardio, like do something to build my body, do something to build my spirit, do something difficult, even though I don't want to in the short term, but because I know that's best for me, which is definitely hard and something that I've struggled with over the last 5 years, probably specifically. But we're not completely hopeless, right? Like we don't, even though it's hard to resist easiness, we can create difficulty for ourselves. And it seems to just becoming more of an individual responsibility to do so.
It's funny. I think this is probably the major reason why ice baths have become so huge. Because mm-hmm. the first thing people say about ice baths before like any of the potential health benefits are, oh yeah, it teaches me to do hard things. It's like, mm-hmm. it makes me do something I don't want to do, which is like, it's such a unique thing in the history of humans to like literally go out of your way to make yourself very uncomfortable. Because before, like, you were uncomfortable all the time.
Yeah, for all of human history.
For all of human history, we've been uncomfortable. And it's like we've been trying to make ourselves more comfortable. And now we've reached this turning point where it's like, hold on, I'm too comfortable. How do I make myself less comfortable? Because life is too good. It's too easy. So now people are taking trash bins, filling it with ice, and then getting in cold water. Or some people are spending $20,000 on a fucking ice bath, like, thing that you could literally spend a fortune on to then, like, just for cold water to get into. And I think people are, like, they're excited at the thought of doing something hard. They're like, this is really difficult. I want to do this. It's almost like Jordan Peterson, how he talks about how when he speaks to a crowd, how people are really excited when they hear him talk about taking responsibility for things. Like, they need to take responsibility. Like, they're yearning for it. Mm-hmm. It's another aspect of this. Like, people are yearning for doing something hard. And it's funny because an ice bath, if we really break it down, it's an easy way to do something hard. If that makes sense. It's like,
quick.
It's quick. It doesn't take much time. And it, like, I don't even think you're supposed to do it for a long period of time, but you get in, you like, you deal with it, and then you're done. It's like, okay, cool. I did my hard thing for the day. And then like, you carry that with you the whole day. It's like, it's almost like, if it causes you to then embrace that and continue to do hard things, that's then I think it's getting the benefit. But if that's your one hard thing for the day, like, it's sort of you just trying to be able to tell people and maybe tell yourself that you're doing hard things when really you're not. That is hard, but like, you're not, are you doing afterwards?
I'm not a cold water immersion guy myself, but I'm still going to defend those people here in a few ways. One, I completely agree with you that my hope is that if that's your first step, that then you do other hard things.
I hope so, yeah.
To make your life better. Two, Jordan hates cold water immersion.
I hate it.
So I think you're slightly biased. Three, I get the like, blunts hypertrophy, inflammation, yada, yada, sure. All right? All these fake natties on the internet talking about milking the last micro pound of muscle gain. It's like, okay, well... Sure. Don't do ice baths. If you're trying to gain as much muscle as physiologically possible, sure. Never do ice baths and do all the things that are optimal. Eat the right amount of protein, blah, blah, blah. Have your training optimal. Four, there are psychological dopaminergic benefits to ice baths. I've talked about this before, but the story of the cocaine addict whose marriage was falling apart, who with three ice baths per day replaced the habit of snorting lines constantly and was able to abstain from hard drug use for a number of years and got his life together as a result. It's in the book Dopamine Nation. There is not only a spike, and by the way, I don't take cold baths. I think there are way better ways to do hard things, but there's a spike in dopamine post ice bath that is sustained for 2 to 3 hours, meaning it's not like cocaine's like this video pods, shoots up, shoots back down. Cocaine, that's why people who do lines like do them constantly. They're going to the bathroom of the club every 20 minutes, just like busting lines off of keys. Don't do this, kids at home. I anti-drug, bringing back the 1990s, dare. your dopamine levels after an ice bath don't crash back down. They stay elevated for a number of hours and they slowly come back down. So there are those real benefits, but that's what I'll say in defense of ice baths.
I have nothing against them from like, if you want to do them, I'm like, you know how you were saying it's annoying when people are like, oh yeah, I don't watch TV. Like I never do that. It's like, this is the same people who are like, they've got to share with everybody that they're doing their ice bath. I'm like, I don't give a fuck about your ice bath. And it's, I just see everybody doing it and everybody talking about it. And I'm like, God damn, like keep it to yourself for everybody's
you
like,
don't,
get
you don't the- have hit the mute button. You don't have to consume it. What do you mean keep it to yourself?
What all if, right, what all if, right. Now you're playing. All right.
Keep
all
your
right.
calorie deficit to yourself. I don't care about your calorie. What?
It's just, people are just jumping on the bandwagon and they love to talk about how they don't watch TV and then they're doing the ice baths. And it's like, all right, yeah, we get it. That's cool. Like, great. I don't know. It's just, it's not. I think people are just looking for the ego content. They're just looking for the ego content.
Yeah, I think there's a lot
of that.
That's
what they're looking for.
I'm also going to defend your position now that do hard things that are actually productive. Like you training jiu-jitsu hard for the last number of years, that's a hard thing that you do every single day that takes longer than an ice bath and also gives you a skill that that has value in life to a greater degree, in my opinion, than an ice bath. Than an ice bath gives.
Without question.
I mean, unless you're on cocaine withdrawals and you're trying to, like, then I...
Or if you're, like, running away from a murder in an ice storm and you need to jump into a frozen lake to escape and, like, your body's adapted to it, then, yeah, great.
Hey, but if you want to optimize the amount of muscle you have, never, ever go in cold water. It's like, all right, what does optimize even look like for a non-drug user? I mean, really, what, like... You can gain, I don't know what, it depends on how tall you are, but...
Half an ounce 20, of muscle 30, more 30, over a
30.
Year.
If, let's say you can gain something like 40 to 50 pounds of muscle over a lifetime, 20, 30, 35, let's call it 40. And so what? Is it going to be 38 compared to 41 over a 20-year window? What does 3 pounds of muscle look like on a 5'10" male? Doesn't look like anything. People get confused about that too. They see before and afters of someone losing fat and they're like, oh, I want to see crazy before and afters with muscle gain. No, you don't see muscle gain on your physique. Yeah, like it takes a long time. I'm all riled up.
Yeah, I like that topic.
I did too. We need to do hard things. There's a Soren Kierkegaard quote about this, about sometimes life will be so easy that the only thing we yearn for is struggle itself. Something along those lines, which I think we're approaching that time. You know, there are people in the world who aren't approaching that time and who are still struggling on a daily basis.
Yeah.
I hesitate to say this because I don't ever want to discourage anyone from being active. I think it's really, really good, especially in this day and age, to be active. But I also think it's important to have a comprehensive understanding of truth in certain realms. And something that I see sometimes are people who want to optimize strength gains and are very interested in making strength and muscle gain progress in the gym, and also are very active and like things like pickup basketball, like backyard football, martial arts, things of that nature. And I think a lot of people don't realize that those additional activities are amazing in and of themselves, but they do make it harder to progress in building strength and muscle. Agree or disagree?
Well, obviously the classic, it depends, right? It depends on how much they're doing, right? If they're like doing it for like
3 to 5 hours a week.
Yeah, it inherently makes it harder just because you're expending more energy. There's less time that you can put into the gym. There's less effort and energy and intensity that you can put into strength training. So yeah, absolutely. I think that in the fitness world, especially in our end of the fitness world, I know I used to struggle with this a lot. I assumed people wanted to be bigger and stronger than they really did. Like, I think for the average person, especially like my average client, they don't want to be as big and strong as a lot of fitness people do. I'll never forget. Do you remember Martin Birkin? Do you remember one of his client testimonials from years ago? Like, you have to remember this, because Martin's client testimonials were like legendary at the time. It was just like, holy shit, this guy's producing insane client results, da, da, da. And one of his client testimonials, there was a guy who had told him he wanted to look like Brad Pitt in Fight Club. And then he put a side-by-side picture of his client and then Brad Pitt, and his client's physique was way more impressive. And he was like, I think he did a pretty damn good job. And I'll never forget that. It was a genius way to like to show that client transformation from a marketing perspective, but also from the perspective of even for guys who say they want to like get big muscles. Like a lot of them are like, well, I don't want to get like a bodybuilder though. Like they want to be like lean and have, they want to be like toned and defined. They don't want to get as big and bulky. So for that, I don't think it's going to impede people like the average Joe or Jane from really achieving what they want. But if you want to achieve pretty insane levels of muscular development and strength development or advanced levels or even high intermediate to advanced, then yeah, you're going to have to start like reducing the extra activity so that you can put more time and really intensity into your training.
I've just seen in myself and in so many clients stall out on strength progress and find less enjoyment in training and then reduce other activity and watch results in the gym skyrocket. So I'm not making a judgment call on whether or not the sacrifice of optimal progress for the enjoyment and benefit of the other activities. I'm not making a judgment on what you should or shouldn't do, but I'm saying, it, in fact, if I was to make a judgment, I'd say do those other activities. Like I think it's probably the right path for most people from a mental and physical health perspective, but those extra activities do make it harder to make that progress in the gym.
100%.
And that's something you need to realize, especially if you're kind of the neurotic type who is really trying to make as much progress as possible. Understand that that extra stuff you're doing isn't helping you, like sports specifically.
I have that conversation occasionally now, but I used to have it all the time when a lot of my clients were powerlifters.
I bet.
When they wanted to compete, even recreational, not like high level. I mean, recreational men and women who were between 18 and 60 who were competing in powerlifting. And they're telling me how they're doing, whether it's like CrossFit or they're going like rucking and all this stuff. And it's like, and then they're also trying to do powerlifting. I'm like, well, yeah, like, of course your max has an increased rate. You already have a relatively intermediate to high intermediate level of strength. So your progress is going to be slow anyway. And then you're going on like 12 mile rucks throughout the week. Of course you're going to be, not only is it going to be more difficult because of that lack of energy, but I remember Eric Cressy would talk about this all the time. He would always talk about how he would like, if you're, he's a baseball guy, right? So baseball is a very like anaerobic, alactic sport, like quick, explosive. When you run from home to first or any of the bases, like it should be like a couple seconds. It's not a long duration thing. When you take a swing at the ball, boom, it's quick, explosive. It's powerful, anaerobic, alactic, as powerful as it gets. So he's like, why am I going to have someone go on 45-minute runs and train the complete opposite energy system that they need to be training when they're a high level professional athlete in this sport? So if you're trying to compete at a high level, then it makes sense to, at the very least, minimize, if not drop those things entirely. But if you're just a everyday, you know, I want to strength train, but I also want to do this and I also want to do this, like go for it. But yeah, it inherently makes it harder for sure.
Great episode. Thank you so much for listening. We hope you have an incredible week. One quick thing before we're done. We have one ask. Please subscribe to our YouTube channel at Personal Trainer Podcast. We're going to drop it down in the show notes as well, a link to our YouTube channel. We're going hard on YouTube. We're putting all these episodes on YouTube. We're putting shorts on YouTube. We have shorter episode or shorter like micro content on there, 5 to 10 minute videos. And we would really, really, really appreciate if you would drop us a subscribe on YouTube. We're pumping these out. We don't have advertisers here on this podcast. We're not spamming you with, you know, Peloton this and, you know, protein powder that. So in exchange for this episode, we'd really, really appreciate if you subscribe to our YouTube at Personal Trainer Podcast. Thank you. We love you. See you soon.
This guy says he's not a sales guy. That was amazing. What a pitch.
The pre-workout is still coursing through my veins.
All right, we're going to go record next week's episode right now. Let's go.
Bang.